Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning and welcome to Essex Church, where this community known as Kensington Unitarians meets each Sunday for worship, as well as for other activities during the week. We are a community made up of all those who walk through our doors, and we welcome you here today. Today's service has as its theme a Unitarian communion, and towards the end of the service there'll be some shared words for us to speak to one another, and then those who wish are invited to come to the front and share bread and wine together in a simple ceremony. And as always with Unitarian activities, there is a pass option. You are welcome to join in as much or as little as you wish. Tristan now lights our chalice flame. This chalice with a flame is the symbol of Unitarians and Unitarian Universalists all around the world. I always like to think that a similar chalice flame is being lit today as part of worship in liberal religious communities, as far afield as the Khasi Hills of North India, in Canada, in Uganda. They too will be having trouble with the matches. Give you the meanest of jobs. Thank you. The chalice. The chalice is an ancient symbol of containment and infinite possibility. That flame is dynamic and illuminating. May the time we spend together this morning be blessed with these qualities, and may these symbols remind us of our connections with people, both far and near. This is the service where you get three for the price of one. You are getting three different views on this word, communion. All I can say is that they get better, actually, as they go along. I wonder what you were like as teenagers, you lot. It's sometimes hard to tell, isn't it, when you look at us now. I was really quite obnoxious at times, particularly with my family, who I regarded as old-fashioned, snobbish, boring. I took a really quite unhealthy delight in being different, annoying my parents as much as possible. And now when I look back, it's clear that I was influenced, I'm blaming, in fact, the spirit of the time. This was the late 60s. Life was exciting and new. My older brother and sister had been confirmed into the Church of England because that was what people did. And when my mum asked me when I was going to be confirmed, I put on that haughty look and said, I'd never be so hypocritical. And anyway, what was the point? Well, she said, you won't be able to take communion unless you're confirmed. And that stayed with me. Over the years, I've watched people going up to receive bread and wine from the priest. I've wondered about it. And even though I never was confirmed, I did go and take part once in a Church of England in an Anglican ritual. And there was a tiny part of me the whole time that wondered if I was going to get struck down by divine wrath for cheating. And then when I started religious studies, many interesting things about this ritual of sharing bread and wine in religious communities became apparent. It's got its roots in truly ancient times, the symbolic eating of a god, and through that act, sharing in the god's divine qualities. Well, that's recorded, for example, in the Egyptian Book of the Dead. It's a ritual that was practiced by many pagan mystery traditions. And it's the mystery traditions that particularly were worshipping Mithras and Attis that were popular when Paul was establishing that early Christian church. Scholars are continuing to debate then the historicity, I never know how to say that, historicity? The veracity, the truth of the account of the Lord's Supper in the Gospels, in which Jesus offered his followers bread and wine with the injunction that they should do this in memory of him. Is this historically accurate, or was it written later by members of the early church as a way of explaining and formalizing the origins of their important new ritual? But the historical truth I think, of these biblical accounts is perhaps less important than the way in which this ritual then helped to shape the development of Christianity. You know, the issue of whether leavened or unleavened bread should be used brought the split between Catholicism and the Orthodox Church. Whether the bread and the wine did become the body and blood of Christ was one of the splits between Catholicism and Protestantism. And what of us Unitarians? Well, as a non-conforming, dissenting church, we had our roots in that Protestant tradition. And a communion service would have been held in most Unitarian congregations a few times a year, well into the middle of the 20th century, and indeed beyond. They're held to this day. Most of our congregations still have their communion silver locked away in a safe, just like ours. And as a ritual, it would have been seen most probably as connecting people with Jesus, with the Christian tradition, and with one another in community. In the 20 years or so that I've been a Unitarian, I've taken part in the most beautifully eclectic range of communion services, with flowers and chocolates and bread and biscuits and lots of hugs. And what has touched me is that each of these ceremonies has been created from the hearts of those who have led them. And so it is today. Tristan and Jane have explored, both together and on their own, what this ritual of offering bread and wine really means to them. And I think this is what we Unitarians do so well, allowing people to explore what is significant to them and to re-enliven and indeed reclaim traditional ways of worship in community with one another.
This reading is by Winston Abbott and comes from Come Walk Among the Stars. The gift of life is a thing of transient beauty, a thing of mystery, and above all else, a miracle. It is a thing of beauty because of the soul, a mystery because it stretches between the invisible yesterday and the unknown tomorrow. A miracle because it is a composite of countless other lives. And as my life has been gently touched by other lives, it follows that I have touched theirs too. One cannot always know the time of greatest need. Perhaps this is how it should be. Perhaps it is only for me to light one darkened corner of the path, to place a hand upon your shoulder as a symbol of my kinship and my love. Perhaps I came this way, as did you, to fill some special need. But this is not always given to us to know. Sometimes a single word will lift the spirit. Sometimes words are so inadequate, and sometimes it is destined that one must only listen. Sometimes a smile will bridge the empty darkness. Sometimes just the nearness is the answer. From many lives I have gathered courage and strength. I have learned humility and gentleness. And for all of these blessings, I am grateful.
In this short reflection, I hope to say something about what communion means to me personally, or at least what it's become in my imagination, as I have almost no first-hand experience or history with it. I really struggled to articulate my own fuzzy and nebulous thoughts in a way that would make some sense outside of my own head, so I'll attempt to explain. I want to begin by drawing your attention to the words on the front of your order of service. They're taken from a poem called Separation, a Chinese poem, which for me points towards the essence of communion. In the poem, an old man hears of the death of a friend and laments the loss of so many others who were dear to him. He realises that he can now count just four men who he's known and loved that remain. And even they are scattered across a kingdom of thousands of miles. No one is close at hand. Thinking of his beloved friends, he says, "Longing for each other, we are all grown grey, through the fleeting world rolled like a wave in the stream. When shall we meet and drink a cup of wine, and laughing, gaze into each other's eyes?" The sense of longing and loneliness and the depth of love in this poem touches me deeply. I imagine it's an experience common to many of us at one time or another. When times are good, we might feel steady enough, but other times we may feel so alone in the face of life's troubles that nobody's really there to keep us company as we are rolled like a wave in the stream. We may encounter so many people in our day-to-day life, and yet it's rare to go beyond surface things, rare to be truly present and make a deep connection, rare to feel that we know and are known by another and that we're cared for in some ultimate way. All of this resonates strongly with my idea of what communion might mean and what the ritual might be able to offer us. Given all that, perhaps it's not that surprising that I found it so difficult to write about my feelings and thoughts on this. Maybe whatever it is that we're dealing with in communion, which for me is something around the ultimate unity of all that is, the often unspoken love that we feel in community, and bigger than that, the cosmic love that enfolds us all. Maybe this is something so deep and powerful that it's best approached obliquely, metaphorically, poetically, or even in silence altogether. For me, the ritual of communion offers a chance to reach out to each other with tenderness, to symbolically cross the boundaries of our separate human selves, to express something simple but profound about the depth of our connection and caring, and to affirm the truth that ultimately we are one with each other and with all that is. We share each other's joys and sufferings, and our fates are inextricably intertwined as part of the independent web of all creation. So as we prepare to hold our own communion here today, it feels right that we keep an awareness of what communion meant for our Unitarian Christian forebears, what it means for our brothers and sisters in other churches today. And yet, one of the joys of our liberal tradition is that we can take the rituals, symbols, and metaphors that have been handed down to us and make them our own. So I hope those of us that are here this morning are able to offer our presence, our nearness, as Winston Abbott said, as we enter into this ritual together, or simply sit in loving witness. We'll each bring our own subtly different understandings of its meaning, and I hope that each of us will take something of worth from the experience in our own way. Two short excerpts, one by John Luther Adams and one by Clinton Lee Scott, on the prophethood of all believers. Our tradition has articulated and emphasised the notion not only of the priesthood of all believers, but also of the prophethood of all believers. This means especially the capacity and the right to participate in the shaping of the congregation. This prophethood belongs not merely to the clergy, it belongs to the congregation and to the individuals in the congregation. Always, it is easier to pay homage to prophets than to heed the direction of their vision. It's easier blindly to venerate the saints than to learn the human quality of their sainthood. It's easier to glorify the heroes of the race than to give weight to their examples. To worship the wise is much easier than to profit from their vision. Great leaders are honoured not by adulation, but by sharing their insights and values. Grandchildren of those who stoned the prophets sometimes gather up the stones to build the prophet's monument. Always it is easier to pay homage to the prophets than to heed the direction of their vision.
For some of us, the thought of communion brings to mind boring times of church past. the acrid smell of incense wafted one too many times, and long, troubling words like transubstantiation and epiclesis. It might conjure up images of a priest resplendent in archaic dress, holding aloft a wafer and a cup, back turned as he whispers secrets over them in Latin, before distributing part of those mysteries to an expectant queue, kneeling reverently before the altar. To any with a racing heart at these memories, I can assure you this will not happen today. Today's service came about with two companions talking over shared cake and tea. Companions, which literally means those who share their bread, in communion with each other. We wondered what it would mean to share bread with our beloved community, as part of our worship, as well as our fellowship. We talked about how Jesus took something so simple and made it so powerful, but remembered how each and every tradition has some form of prasad, or holy food. Once the go-ahead had been given, I began to wonder if I could really do it. Could I stand at an altar and touch bread and wine, break it and share it with my friends, no longer as agape, but as part of the sacrament of everyday life, taking a full role in the prophethood of all believers? All of a sudden, I was stepping up to take responsibility for the words which so easily flowed from my lips. Of course, all have the authority to minister to each other, because, to draw from my Quakerism, that of God is in everyone. For me, Jesus was not the one and only divine. He was no more the Son of God than we are all sons and daughters of God. But Jesus was different. In the words of a hymn we sang 2 weeks ago, Jesus, Krishna, Buddha had the wisdom to see clearly. Jesus overflowed with that of God, compassion, gentleness, love. That is why I can try, stumbling, falling, scraping my knees, holding his scarred hand, to follow his way. Today, my friends, I invite you to leave bad memories of church past behind. I invite you to look within yourselves and within each other. You would not be you without your neighbor, just as the bread would not be bread without sunshine and rain. You would not be you without stardust. You would not be you without your flaws or without your perfections. Look at yourself. Look at your neighbor. Look at your husbands and wives and sons and daughters. See the broken and see the whole. That is what we remember when we pray the words of the Eucharist, the great thanksgiving. That is what we remember when we break a piece of bread off and say the bread of life, and hold the cup and say a cup of blessing. As a good Protestant, I find the image of sacrifice in communion to leave a very bad taste in my mouth. This is about atonement, at one-ment. This is being at one with each other, with God, with the beyond, an outward sign of an inward grace. My friends, today I ask for your companionship and your communion. Remember the flowers of the field and how they could not be so without the sunshine. Remember your neighbor, and how she could not be so beautiful without the clouds. Remember your own broken self, and remember that sense of at-one-ment, and be whole.
In times like this, I believe we receive fragments of holiness, glimpses of eternity, brief moments of insight. Let us gather them up for the precious gifts that they are, and renewed by their grace, move boldly on into life. Go well. Blessed be. Amen.